You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
I'm Joe Iconis.
And I'm Jennifer Ashley Tepper.
And on today's episode, we are talking about The Nurse and The Addict.
If you ever wanted to have a dance party to an absolutely psychotic song alone in your room, this track by Taylor Trench will do it.
It's inspired by the film and book Misery by Stephen King and is about addiction and is about writing and is about dependency on chemicals and human beings and fandom. And it's about 3.5 minutes too long.
It could have been even longer, as I learned from the podcast, and you will too.
Enjoy.
The Nurse and the Addict, this was one of my favorite songs that we recorded. Like in the recording session, I feel like I was like doing a mosh pit of my own in the studio.
Yeah, it's one of those songs that is, it's one of the more rare songs on the album for sure. You know, it's a tune that I wrote the first time for a Halloween show at the Beachman because it is inspired by the Stephen King novel and subsequent film and later stage play, Misery.
Yes. I love this song so much. I've only been able to get through half of Misery, not because it isn't great, but because it scares me. And I feel like I owe it to my boyfriend who made me read the book and also to this song, which is one of my favorite Joe Iconis songs, to like read it. And thank you for not making the song so that I can't sit through it. It's
anytime.
A terrifying story.
Yeah, it is a terrifying story. Yeah, and the, you know, the story, I've always loved Misery a lot. And the story itself, I just love that Stephen King wrote it kind of about, or not kind of, like he's talked about this, he wrote it sort of about his drug addiction.
Right.
That's kind of like the central metaphor of Misery. And I really loved how that idea of like, you know, whatever it is, your muse or your drive or whatever is this thing that is both allowing you to work at a certain level and wrecking you.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that. I also love like all the stuff in Misery sort of about like fandom, you know, there really is, it is kind of like, I feel like it's, you know, spiritually connected to like other sort of like fandom forward things that I love, like King of Comedy and other stuff, like, you know, sort of things that are about stalkers, people who are sort of like obsessed with the art and the artists, you know, art and the artists who make them.
Yeah. I feel like we should have done a pop-up performance of this song when Misery was running on Broadway, like right outside the Broadhurst.
I just know.
Taylor Trench screaming the musical version of the show.
Yeah, screaming at Larry Metcalf. So yeah, and so it's sort of, you know, all of that kind of bubbled up and created this tune.
Which, what year was this? I'm trying to place it. Did it premiered on Halloween?
It premiered on Halloween, but I remember when I first premiered it, it wasn't like one of those ones that was an immediate hit. You know, it wasn't like, it didn't feel fully cooked right out of the gate. And so I did it, and I feel like it might have been like 2013, 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't do it for a little bit. And then we revisited it again at a Musical Theater Factory concert where Jeremy Moore sang it, which was good. But again, it like never, it, the song itself, like there's always something about it that didn't quite click for me. And so that's why I feel like this is one of the ones that really came together in the studio, you know, and sort of like the idea that I had about how to orchestrate it and sort of like the kind of maximalist treatment of it and the typewriters and, you know, there's so much happening on the track. I think that that actually served it. It's like one of the rare songs where I think it's like kind of better, not stripped down. You know, I think it's more itself. It feels more authentically what it's, you know, it feels more authentically itself when all of that other garbage is on the track.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I've never really thought about that before in reference to your songs. Like I've thought about it a lot in terms of musicals, like some shows you could see a reading of at Open Jar and it would be just as good or better if it was on than if it was on Broadway. And then some shows need other stuff, like, you know, it's like Jonathan Larson with Tick, Tick, Boom, like those songs would have sounded great without a full band, but they needed a full band so that the music could become what it became. Are there other songs of yours that, like The Nurse and the Addict, you feel like, oh, with full production, like, it's just, it requires it theatrically? Like, I almost want to say that Ammonia is one, only because it's such a different song, whether it's like just a person with a piano or others, but it's good both ways.
Yeah.
But that's one that actually feels like two different things.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, it's a, you know, I think for some of them, it's more like the production adds another layer, you know, or it's like a lot of the times it's songs that are very sort of genre forward. So like something like Sympathy for the Killer or Out of Sight, Out of Mind, you know, the way that those songs are written, the way that they're constructed, they have a very sort of, you know, a golden age, you know, kind of 1940s or 20s even. The chord progression, melody, and you know, lyrical style, and so it's sort of baked into the writing of the song. But there's just something about hearing those songs with, you know, period appropriate orchestration that really sort of like, you know, drives it home. But I think, you know, a lot of my songs, it's usually the opposite. Like it's usually like with it, you can take away everything and the song works just as well in a totally stripped down way, because that's just the way I write. I write, you know, for a song to be able to be played on the piano and have it work. But yeah, there's just something about Nurse in the Attic. And I think also because this song is so much about excess, you know, it's so much about someone kind of drowning in this sort of excess of their own making, that it's like, it's there's just more clarity to it when it's this wall of sound in your face.
Totally.
Explosion.
I also think, and then I'll go back to Nurse in the Attic, that Honey is probably one of them in a way. Like I've heard Honey
100%.
Like bring down the house when you like have played it on the piano at Sardi's and it's just like folks singing and you, but it becomes this like Beatles concert when it's done in concert with like the full band, with the backup singers, with, you know, like whoever's singing it at a microphone, you know, killing it. That's one. So Nurse in the Attic, we have to talk about the great Taylor Trench. And I remember so specifically when you like came home from Barrington, from doing a concert at Barrington, and you were like, oh my God, I met Taylor. It was Taylor Trench and Annelle Nathan. Like you got to know them at the same time.
I
don't think you weren't directly working with them. You can correct me, but like they were in maybe the Bill Cabaret and you were doing it. And you were like, these two people, like I have to work with them.
Truly.
Obviously you knew who they were already, but it was just like a big moment.
Yeah, no, truly. Yeah, I lived with them in a house. I lived with them. I lived with them before I worked with them, which is like the most 70s thing I've ever said. Taylor Trench and the great Annelle Nathan were in this concert at Barrington Stage Company, which has been an artistic home for me for a very long time. And it's this concert that Bill Finn did called, what's the name of it? It's
Songs You Should Know by Ridiculously Talented Composers and Lyricists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's sort of a core group of actors. And then I hosted it with him this year. So they asked me to come and host this concert with Bill Finn. We sat at a table. It was very strange, but very lovely. And so in this concert was, you know, Anne, who I had been a fan of, who I knew, and Taylor, who I'd never seen before. And I was so obsessed with both of them as performers and as people. But the, you know, but Taylor was sort of like, it was so shocking because I had just never seen him. And so yeah. I was like, oh my God, who is this guy? Where did he come from? The answer is Florida. And and he, there's just nobody like him.
Yeah.
Nobody like him.
I didn't realize you had never seen him before because as you said, Florida, my introduction to Taylor Trench was a frantic call from my sister when she was at high school thespians being like, I just saw this boy win and he's going to be in New York. He's going to be a huge star. You have to watch out for him. His name's Taylor Trench, which I always have to tell Taylor. And of course, like I grew up worshiping Annal Nathan, especially from her Tony performance from Thoroughly Modern Millie. So two very good choices to grow into a Barrington.
And you know, and Taylor also, and this actually is a great sort of, you know, case for, I talk a lot about how I don't like auditions and I wish there was a way to just kind of meet people and get a sense of them as humans. And then that would be the thing that that would allow us to decide, oh, this person would be good for this role, this person would be good for this role. But Taylor, in addition to his performance being so great, as a human being, I just found him so so peculiar and and charismatic and interesting that was so much a part of my initial, you know, being like sort of swept off my feet by him. Because he's just such an unusual guy and so funny. He's one of the like 10 people who like truly, truly, truly can make me laugh. Yeah. I just think he's hilarious.
He's so funny.
Yeah. Which is why the first thing that I guess I really did with him was the Christmas show. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chestnut.
He originated the role in Mr. Chestnut.
Yeah, he originated the role. that role is that role because
and
of Taylor Trench.
You did several other things with him since then.
And Taylor was Taylor played Jeremy in the first proper workshop of Be More Chill. It was Taylor and George. And Lauren played Christine in that reading.
Are you talking about the one like at the WME office before?
No, that was sort of a bootleg reading. But this was like our first 29
hour
with people singing. And
in
the Davenport offices.
I remember. Wow.
Yeah.
Long time
Jeremy
ago.
In that one.
I do remember that. Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
And then we did a big workshop of Black Suits in 2013, I believe. And Taylor was Chris in that. He was very brilliant. I love him a lot.
He's good in everything. I've never seen him be bad. And this performance on the album is genuinely funny, just like everything Taylor does. It's so, like, I laugh when I listen to it. I'm like, I've heard it a bunch of times. Like, it's so funny.
Well, that's the other thing, too, that, like, I knew that I wanted it to be really in your face, really confrontational. I knew that the whole idea was that we were going to have this kind of sonic landscape that was kind of overwhelming. And the song is so aggressive that I thought it would be cool to have somebody like Taylor who is so naturally funny and so sort of goofy at the center of it. And I think it makes it sort of resonate even more. And when I sing the song, it kind of like, it sort of starts in an aggressive place and just kind of gets more and more aggressive. And there's like real anger there. But I think in Taylor's performance, the anger sort of creeps in and it's actually, it becomes less anger and more sort of fear, you know, in a way that I think is really, really helpful to the song.
Yeah.
And you know, the end, that whole end round, there's so many songs on the album that end with a coda, you know, which is like a section of a song that you haven't heard before. I love a coda. in general. And I end a lot of songs with a severe amount of repetition, because I'm also very obsessed with repetition. And I think there's lots of exciting, dramatic and thematic benefits to repetition. But in this song, in Nurse in the Attic, I knew from the top that I wanted it to be this merry-go-round that never stops, you mm-hmm. know? And I think, obviously or not obviously, it's, sort of speaking to addiction and this idea of one more time. I'm just gonna do this thing one more time. And it's every time is one more time. So I always imagine that I would love if I had limitless funds and I was a very famous person, I would love to release a single version of Nurse in the Attic that was on a vinyl, and the end coda would just go on for 20 minutes, or it would just go on for however much is left on that side of vinyl.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the idea, that it just keeps going and going endlessly.
For folks listening at home, I feel like I want to sing along to the part that the audience sings along to in the concert when I listen to it on the album. So feel free to do that in your homes. But it is one of those that you just can't help it.
Yeah.
I also didn't realize until the way you were just describing it, it's very much like that Hal Prince thing of you're watching Cabaret and you start to get into how great the song Tomorrow Belongs to Me is. And mm-hmm. you realize oh my God, it's a Nazi song. Where I didn't think of it that way. But of course, it's about addiction.
Yeah. I mean, and that's it. And it's like Taylor's performance at the end, we did it so many times and he had a lot of ideas and we just sort of let him, go. And he's just amazing. It was so thrilling to watch him just, sort of lose his mind and then just scream. That was what he was. And I remember that his sort of final scream during the last time. I remember he was he was like, oh, I just have this idea about maybe I could just scream or something. Maybe I'll just do it. And I was like, yeah, sure. Obviously just do it. And he just literally screamed. And it's one of my favorite things on the album.
It's
when an actor says I thought maybe I'd scream it. I just thought he would sort of give it some more vocal oomph, but it's just a wordless scream. And I was like, oh yeah, that's exactly what, that's the, the natural progression of what this is.
It's really so good. It really is just that Halloween playlist from the album keeps going on in my head as we get to more and more Halloween numbers. There's a lot of them.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you looking forward to the moment when a school does it and they split it into two parts and it's the nurse in the attic or something? I feel like we could see it.
Yes, it's inevitable. But the title, I'm glad that you just said the title of it, because I remember now that the original title of it was Annie Wilkes, which is the name of the woman who is Paul Sheldon's fan and captor in Misery. And even though I have so many songs that are character names and so many songs where the name never appears in the song, it felt incorrect because it's not her, and then it was the nurse and the writer for a while. The nurse in the attic just felt like if that's how we're boiling this down, that's what it should be.
I really can't think of a lot of your songs that have had title changes, but that's true. Mm-hmm. I shuddered when I heard Annie Wilkes, because that's how much Misery did a number on me. But you're right. It doesn't feel right for the song.
The song doesn't hang with that.
Yeah.
The Nurse and the Addict.
Hey, thanks so much for listening or watching to my podcast. Do me a favor and go to wherever you just listen to or watch this thing and subscribe or like or give us a great rating or review, and then head to bpn.fm/album to find out even more information about this podcast, more ways to watch, more ways to listen, and check out my album. Thanks so much for hanging out.
Album Podcast is executive produced by Liz Armstrong, produced by Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, Kim Garris, and the rest of the team at the Broadway Podcast Network. Be sure to visit bpn.fm/album for both audio and video versions of this podcast and to listen to Album.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suf's celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suf's has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.